Hello, folks. This is Rich Outfield. And you have been cursed by an old ethnic woman to be listening to the Rish Out cast. I'm your host. In this episode, we're going to bring you the second part of my novella, Newfound Fame. Unfortunately, it has been about 6 weeks since I recorded the first part, and I can't recall what I talked about there. I believe that I talked about going to a horror convention, the very first one that I went to, and how out of place I felt. It made me feel like I wasn't a horror fan at all. I was an imposter. And some of that experience influenced this story easily. Yes. This time, I suppose I should talk about the main character. But first, let's go ahead and play the second chunk of Newfound Fame. And I hope that you enjoy it. I do.
Newfound Fame by Rish Outfield. 7. Alonzo Moss took Ernst aside and opened his mouth to speak. Ernst beat him to it.
How did that go, do you think?
Stammered the man. They were walking toward the stage exit, where Ernst's skinny security man was waiting.
I have to apologize for that. I should have given you a heads up about the curse rumor.
A lot more than a rumor, judging by your notes, Ernst said, looking at the cards Moss still held in his hand.
Well, yes,
Moss sighed.
A lot of the interest in your movie that's been drummed up lately has been about that curse. People love to talk about mysteries and scandals and tragedy, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. In my day, it was who killed JFK or why we're really in Vietnam.
He was trying to be nonchalant about it, but it was spooky the way everybody in the room knew about it, except for him.
You might have warned me, though.
Moss nodded, swallowing.
I didn't know if I'd bring it up or not. Depended on how many questions you got. I guess it must feel like we ambushed you in there.
Yeah, Ernst admitted.
That was exactly the feeling. Ambush. Though he hadn't thought to use that exact word.
But look, I've never been punished by any monsters for doing that movie. Although I did get kidney stones once. And that's no picnic. I'm sorry about the director and those other folks.
Moss checked his phone, then signaled the bodyguard over. The young man stepped up to them.
Wyatt, would you accompany Ernst to the green room to grab something to eat? Then you can do your signing after that.
You got places you gotta be?
Ernst asked. He had begun to see Alonzo as a friend, and hoped he wasn't being naive. He was too old to be gullible anymore.
Yes and no. I need to check in with Guillermo del Toro. He's got a panel this afternoon, and he just barely got here.
Ernst didn't know who that was, but the way Alonzo said the name, he must have been a lot bigger actor than an old guy who once wore a monster suit.
Well, if you get a minute later on, feel free to check on me.
Will do, Alonzo said. You've got your walkie, remember?
Ernst had forgotten, but he checked, and it was still snapped to his belt loop.
Okay.
Interior, maintenance shack. Night. Chet pushes the canoe up against the door, looking for something to secure it with, but finds nothing. Margot crouches in the corner, getting herself under control.
This can't be happening.
It is. Do you think Brad and Lizzie made it to the cabin?
I don't know. I hope so. Do you think they'll be all right?
More important, will we be all right?
I didn't really believe in it.
Me neither. But now that we've wakened this thing, it's going to come for us, one at a time.
We didn't do anything wrong.
Didn't we, Margot? We wanted to see what would happen, so we messed around. And now we know. It works exactly like the book said it would.
Okay, then how does this book say to stop it?
It doesn't. It just says the creature will strike when its victim is alone.
Alone. Like the slave boy was alone.
Then that means we should be safe in here together.
Oh yeah? Tell that to Etika and Roger.
Etika and Roger weren't exactly together. She was in the kitchen, and he was in the bedroom.
That's all it takes? Going out of a room?
That's all it takes. They share a look, letting their situation truly sink in.
Eight. Ernst hadn't been in the main hall yet, though he'd peeked his head in. There was a cacophony of noise, scary music, screams, and chatter there. It was bigger than a football field, and as packed with attendees as a football stadium. Okay, maybe a football stadium in Cleveland, on a rainy day. There were dozens, maybe hundreds, of booths set up, where people could buy all sorts of useless horror movie junk, like shirts, masks, bootleg videos, jewelry, posters, statuettes, phony weapons, magazines, props, scary music or dark metal music collections, original artwork, plastic skeletons and skulls, vampire teeth and colored contact lenses, tattoos, and even coffins, though Ernst couldn't tell if they were for real or just for Halloween decorations. One vendor was selling pet tarantulas and scorpions. Shudder. There was a section where people could buy insanely overpriced food. Not horror-themed, though. And then a celebrity corner, where autographs and photo ops were available. Ernst scanned the banners, only recognizing two or three names, one of them being the lady who played Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and was surprised to see the long lines at most of them. One of the little booths had Ernest Hillerman, the Brown Depths Monster, on it, and a photo Ernst had sent in of him, blown up big enough to be unrecognizable. He'd been asked if he had any 8x10s to sign, and actually had to ask what an 8x10 was. He'd been told that people might have their own items to sign, but if they didn't, he could autograph their convention program. Ernst doubted anybody would show up, especially when the banner didn't even get his name right. "Hey there," a white-haired, bug-eyed man said, walking up to him. He put out his hand. "I'm Tobin. You Ernest Hillerman?" "Well, Ernst," he shook the guy's hand. "I just wanted to say that I love your movie. Actually saw it back in the 80s in a theater on a date. Later married that girl."
"You don't say," Ernst said, and smiled. "I didn't think anybody liked it. Your wife here, too?"
"Nah, we didn't stay married.
It wasn't that good a movie."
And Tobin laughed. Ernst nodded, still looking around, taking it all in. Across the way, a pretty blonde was posing for a picture with a big dude named Hodder. She actually kissed him on the cheek for the photo. Must be nice.
"Hey, you, want an autograph?" he asked the fan.
"Oh, no, I'm here signing, too. I'm in the Saw movies, you know?" Ernst didn't know. But sure enough, there was a banner with that guy's face on it, too, three tables from his own.
"Oh, great. You do these things a lot?"
"I try to. Pays better than the movies do."
"You don't say,"
Ernst said again. The fan slash actor excused himself and went back to his own table. Wyatt, the security guard, said,
"You want me to stick around?"
Ernst had forgotten he was still standing there, pretending to be his shadow.
"What do you mean?"
"Sometimes these guys can be intense. The fans, I mean."
Ernst had noticed that, but he didn't mind.
I can get a chair. Sit right here."
A half smile appeared on his face.
Or I can just stand around, looking all tough.
Ernst would believe that when he saw it. Not necessary.
You sure? Yesterday, some asshole tried to cut off a lock of Danielle Harris's hair. Right over there.
He pointed a few booths away to an empty table. Ernst thought he might have read one of Dan L. Harris's books once, a long time ago. But he shook his head.
I'll be fine. Go rest up. Get some coffee. Protect somebody who's under 6 feet tall.
The skinny security guard thanked him and walked away from the Ernest Hillerman table, never to return. He probably should have invited him to sit down for a while. Take a load off. In retrospect, anyway. But Ernst sat down in the office chair that had been placed there, alone. A placard had been set up on the table, showing his panel and signing schedule. It had $20 each printed on it, and he hoped that wouldn't chase people away. It was pretty magical to know he had fans, and wouldn't mind meeting a couple one-on-one. He was not disappointed. People did show up, and a line began to form. There were no pretty blondes that wanted to kiss him, but there were lots of friendly faces, eager to express their love for the movie, how scared it made them, as kids or adults, and ask about the curse. The curse again. Ernst had been raised Baptist, and pretty stringently, but after 4 years on his own, he'd pretty much put all of that behind him. Still, to hear people speak so fervently about black magic or ghosts or whatever the swamp guy was supposed to be, it unnerved him. Of course, they spoke just as fervently about the awful creature feature he'd spent a week working on, being muddy, sweaty, wet, and uncomfortable the whole time. The fans had brought their Blu-rays and DVDs for him to sign, their vintage and newly created movie posters, both professionally glossy and shoddily home-printed images of the monster from the film, and one woman, probably pushing 50 rather than the sorority girls he'd seen earlier, did ask him to autograph her left bosom, which reminded Ernst of pretending to murder a screaming lady in a towel rather than getting to second base with a gal at a teenaged kegger.
How much?
As soon as the Sharpie they'd provided was recapped, Ernst Hillerman half laughed and half coughed when he realized she wanted to pay him for touching her chest.
I don't know. $4, he said, which covered the senior citizen special at Dave and Robert's Cafe, where Ernst sometimes got breakfast back home.
She too laughed, gave him a $5, and did look like she might kiss his cheek, before saying,
You take care of yourself now, as himself. Be a shame if your autograph suddenly went for $1,000 on eBay.
You too, he said,
though he frankly didn't know what she was going on about. Kind of sexy lady, though. Mind-blowingly, these people were more than happy to pay the $20. Ernst took the sign down after the third or fourth time he was handed cash, and a couple of them insisted on giving him the money anyway, even after he said there was no charge. Again, he was really enjoying this, having yet to meet a single person who gave him any reason to believe this was all a joke, that the movie was bad and were pretending otherwise, that he was a nobody and they knew it. He posed for pictures with fans, mostly taken with cell phones, and got thanked over and over for traveling so far and not asking money for autographs. A pair of female fans, obvious siblings, were next in line together.
Do you want to hear the Brown Depth song?
One asked.
Song?
Ernst asked. He didn't know what they were talking about, but he put out his hands in an expansive Be My Guest gesture. They sang it in unison. Not a pretty song, but a creepy one, and not quite singing so much as eerie chanting.
The sad, sad story of a sad, sad man who drowned in the lake so brown. But he didn't rest when he sank below, so beware if you come around. The creature will rise if you disturb him there, and will bring you to your deaths. If you don't believe, just go there sometime and raise him from the brown, brown depths.
Ernst clapped, as did the people behind them in line.
That was really great, girls.
He signed them autographs on printouts they had made of HD stills from the movie they'd created themselves. One of him in the monster suit, grabbing onto the hairy-chested dude, and one of the monster in the fog, looking through the window at the couple that survive at the end.
Thanks for that, he said before they left.
He found himself grinning, thinking that if he'd known a day like this would come, he never would have resented the Bowman kid for never paying him for his week's work back in the 1980s.
Buy you a drink when you get done here,
a skinny kid, who somehow also had a beer belly, said after Ernst signed his official Japanese laserdisc, which he claimed used to be worth a fortune.
What's it worth now?
Oh, I'm not going to sell it, the kid promised. But once the Blu-rays came out, these became pretty worthless.
Oh, that's too bad. I was hoping, Ernst started to say, and then he stopped.
In the line, about a dozen people back, was something that was not human. It was tall, taller even than him, hunched over and appeared to be half rotted away. It wore the remnants of clothes, but those were caked with muck and moss. Filthy water dripped off its body and vanished before it hit the ground.
That's quite a costume back there, he heard himself mutter.
Huh?
The kid said, and turned to look.
What do you mean?
It was too thin to be a person in a suit, wasn't it? And it looked nothing like the costume he'd worn for the movie.
Right there, behind the lady with the cape.
His voice sounded strange in his ears, like he was inexplicably out of breath. The kid glanced back, squinting.
The guy with the spiked jacket?
No, I...
The thing in the line swayed gently, as though treading water, and looked at Ernst with eyes that burned like embers in a skull-like face. The skin around them roiled and moved, seemingly alive, even though this being was not.
Hey, Mr. Hillerman?
The fan stammered.
Are you okay?
I don't feel so great, no,
he said, looking away from the creature in the line and back at the young man in front of him. He turned his attention to the laserdisc and said,
Do you want me to put anything but my name?
You could write Sleep Undisturbed, if too many people haven't asked you to write that already today.
Ernst signed.
They haven't.
He glanced up again. The creature still stood there, its eyes trained on Ernst, while the people around it fidgeted and talked to each other and focused on their phones. Ernst paused with the pen in his hand.
You really don't see anything behind the woman? She's kind of got a punk rock beehive there. The black cape.
The fan tossed a look back in the line.
I see a line of people, he said, as though that helped. Guess they call that a queue some places. Is there somebody special waiting to talk to you?
No, lied Ernst. My mistake.
He finished the autograph.
Sorry about the delay.
The kid thanked him and went on his way. The line moved up, including the creature. The next guy in line, a burly Hispanic 20-something, also saw nothing out of the ordinary behind the lady with a cape.
So you never heard of the curse before?
This fan asked, before having his Fangoria magazine signed.
Never. But all the people that died, what do they say happened with them?
Well, some killed themselves, right? But there's conspiracies out there that it was never suicide. Since nobody left a note.
No note, eh? Ernst swallowed again. He could have used one of those free beers. Maybe several.
And you? What do you think happened?
Me? Oh, geez. I don't know if there's a curse. I mean, maybe.
He considered it a bit longer.
Yeah, I guess maybe there is.
It was all Ernst could do not to glance past the fan and see if the being was still there. So, what happened to them, then?
The fan fidgeted.
I guess it's real, you know? The monster you played.
Ernst slowly digested this.
They say it was a real legend, right? That he was really out there. The kid that got drowned or whatever. And the movie was just based on that legend.
I didn't know it was a real legend.
Ernst had grown up there, within an hour's drive of where they shot the movie, where the Brown Depths Lake was supposed to be. But he'd never known the stories. Of course, he'd moved to town when he was a teenager. Come down from the big, big city. Maybe that was the reason.
But why? Why would it come after me? I didn't do anything to it.
The Hispanic fan grinned.
You're just as guilty as anybody. I mean, you played it, right?
Was this just a joke to him? Ernst found himself looking at the line. There it stood, still dripping water, still staring right at him. The creature from the Brown Depths. Ernst suddenly stood up, so hard that his chair fell back behind him, clattering to the floor. The fan jumped a little bit. One of the security guards looked over, gauging the situation.
"Whoa, dude, I'm sorry,"
said the fan, putting up his hands.
"No, no," Ernst said, putting on a smile he absolutely did not feel.
He raised his voice.
"Come on over here, folks."
No one moved closer.
"Everybody come over here. Everybody in the line, please."
It sounded like he was pleading to his ears, so he widened the smile, tried to push his nervousness away. Three or four people stepped up to the table, but most stayed in the line. It stayed in the line.
"I'm sorry," Ernst said, still smiling falsely. "I don't want to disappoint you. You're all fans of my movie, right?"
Several nods, a couple of cheers from the line.
"So remind me, what's the story with the monster? Is it a ghost? A demon? What?"
"Well, it was a guy once," a young woman with thick glasses said. "But he died and got brought back to life with voodoo."
"Black magic, actually,"
another fan said, wearing a t-shirt with the mother from Carrie and the caption, "They're all gonna laugh at you."
"Right, so I guess that makes it a demon, not a zombie."
Ernst took this in.
"And why did it kill those girls? Why does it come after the people it does?"
"In the movie?"
the thick glasses woman asked.
"Right. It's been a long time. Why does it pick the people to go after?"
"People that desecrated its land,"
the Hispanic fan said. Three or four new strangers joined his private group. One of the fans looked a bit like Frank Zappa, at least as far as the mustache went. He answered,
"It was sleeping, and it got wakened up. Those are the people it kills."
"Right, but why does it kill Tiffany, then?"
the woman asked.
"She was just trying to get to a gas station."
Ernst didn't remember a Tiffany, but he focused hard on the answer.
"No, he was just mad,"
the fat, skinny fan from before said, gesturing at Ernst.
"Mad that the kids woke you up, and you just wanted to kill anybody you saw."
Ernst fixed his gaze on these fans, and nowhere else.
"And what would wake it up now, all these years later?"
"Are you talking about the curse, or the movie?"
asked the first fan.
"Today, if it woke up today."
"Well, the movie did come out on Blu-ray.
Plus, there was the documentary,"
a very short fan remembered.
"Documentaries,"
they're all gonna laugh at you, corrected.
"And people go there all the time."
What do you mean, go there?
Ernst asked.
People make pilgrimages to the place you shot the movie. Take pictures at the locations.
Why?
It's iconic,
said the fan with the Frank Zappa mustache.
Like going to the Psycho House at Universal or the Elm Street House in L.A.
I've been there, added Beer Belly Skinny Guy. They've got it painted up like it was now, so it's more recognizable. Really cool new owners.
Ernst pondered the concept that people would drive, or fly, hundreds of miles to see where a terrible 80s monster movie was once made. It was ludicrous. But so were the photos and t-shirts with his picture on them, the lady that cried when telling him about watching that movie with her twin sister growing up. So were all these people gathered around, dressed up as Wolfmans and Draculas. Ernst got an idea.
How did the good guys stop it?
He asked.
You don't remember?
The black guy with the blonde hair asked, almost horrified.
Please, guys, it's been 30 years.
Nobody stays alone,
Fat Skinny said.
They all stay together.
The kids stay together.
Right. It only attacks people who are by themselves.
But then, at the end, the monster goes back into the lake, right?
They'd shot that on the same night as when he'd come out of the water. It had been surprisingly cold, and so shallow he'd had to go down on his knees to get in over his head.
Well, it was a swamp, but yes,
Frank Zappa corrected. They had shot it at a lake anyway.
Why? Why did it go back?
Well, it killed, what, 6 people?
7 people,
corrected the woman with glasses.
And a dog.
Oh, right, the dog, said the short fan. This should have been funny, Ernst was well aware. But it wasn't.
So, it killed 7 people, and then it was... what? Full?
No, said They're All Gonna Laugh at You. It totally would have killed Brad and Lizzie if they had split up. You know?
Right, right. It wanted to kill them more than anything.
Fat Skinny was getting pretty animated now.
There's that part where you watch them from the window, right? You wanted to go in and kill them, but there they were, side by side. I think that was the scariest part of the movie,
a visibly pregnant lady said. It was the first she had spoken. She held a framed Brown Depths poster under her bulging belly.
No, no, the part where he first comes out of the water, said the glasses-wearing woman. That was the scariest.
2 or 3 other people agreed with her. Ernst glanced over the shoulders of the pregnant woman and the black guy. The creature still stood there, still dripping, still waiting. It looked like a guard dog at a junkyard or a prisoner of war camp. Convention attendees walked around it, walked past it, but never walked into it or through it. They just didn't seem to acknowledge its presence.
I sure appreciate you coming over and talking to me,
he said, faking good humor.
And over there, right by the kid dressed as Raggedy Ann, anybody see anything unusual?
The heads all turned.
Well, that's not Raggedy Ann, it's Chucky,
one of the fans corrected. Nobody commented on the creature. Nobody saw it. Nobody but Ernst.
So, what could somebody do to get it to leave them alone?
You mean, if they made another movie?
Fat Skinny asked.
Is there gonna be another movie?
I hope it's not a remake, added the black fan.
Who owns the rights?
Asked the pregnant lady.
Let's say somebody woke it up again. For real. How could you get it to go back?
All the way back to North Carolina.
That's right.
Just survive the night. At least that's how the movie worked.
Just survive the night, he repeated.
The fans were pretty attentive, and he appreciated them standing there, shielding him from the monster. But they wouldn't stick around forever.
I'll be happy to sign anything you have, And if you want to do a picture, that would be great.
No charge? One fan asked.
No charge. Just spend some time. Tell me about the movie. I'd sure like that.
Ernst picked up his fallen chair, sitting once again. The folks went back to the line, as happy as ever. But there it still sat. There it still waited.
Nine. Interior, cabin, night. Lizzie and Brad run inside, slamming the door behind them. They begin to block up the door, dragging chairs, a table, even the wood-carved grizzly bear from before.
What was that thing?
Brad doesn't answer.
It killed Etika, and maybe Roger, too.
Yeah, pretty sure Roger's dead.
Why are you so calm about this?
It's called shock. I'm not calm.
That wasn't a man. It was something else.
You know what it was. We both do.
What do you mean?
You heard the story. I'd heard it a dozen times. I just never believed it was real.
What? The Brown Depths monster? That's what it was?
My parents told the story when I was little. Always be careful, they'd say. You don't want to wake it up. But I thought it was just a lie to scare little kids like Santa or the Boogeyman or Judgment Day.
She looks at him, trying to gauge his seriousness.
My grandparents said they believed in it too. I guess they really did.
Did we wake it up?
Looks like.
What does it want?
Brad laughs. There's no mirth in it, but he can only laugh.
The people who disturbed its rest. It wants us.
There's gotta be something we can do. Let it know we didn't mean it, you know?
It's not gonna care. The only thing we can do is stay together.
Stay together? You mean move in together?
Stay together, not be alone. Not even for a minute.
Maybe Margot and Chet made it to the police.
I don't think that'll help. Only those marked by it can even see the thing.
Lizzie looks at him like it's the craziest thing she's ever heard. Which, under the circumstances...
It was in a book. Southern Legends and Folk Tales.
Some folk tale.
They hunker down and wait for it to strike. If it's going to. An hour passed in the main hall, and Ernst saw some interesting costumes, vaguely familiar actors, and a few pretty girls. But nothing drew his eye quite like the creature, always hovering several yards away, like it was haunting him. He remembered the walkie-talkie at his side, and nearly turned it on. He could imagine getting on and asking Mr. Moss to drive him home. He wasn't feeling so good. But that might end up with him alone in his hotel room, and that would certainly be worse, if he ended up not quite alone. Maybe he could ask his friend the talent agent to bring him that beer he owed him, as well as a can of ghost repellent, some monster begone spray, if he had any. Not very funny, Ernst was all too aware. Gallows humor, obviously, if he was using that term right. He smiled at a young fan approaching his table, who not only couldn't have been born when the movie came out, but his parents probably hadn't gone through puberty yet.
"You're the scariest one here," said the boy.
"I'm not so sure about that," Ernst said.
10.
"Wow, Ernst, you're still here?"
Alonzo Moss half observed, half asked.
It was well past 4 now. The time his signing was scheduled to end, and the autograph line still had several people in it. From what he'd been told, Ernest Hillerman had really embraced his newfound celebrity, posing in pictures, signing his name until 2 Sharpies had dried up, and going to the other autograph booths to talk to the actors and filmmakers there. "Just can't get enough of your adoring fans?"
"Guess so," Ernst said.
He looked tired. His eyes were a little bloodshot, and there were sweat marks on his underarms. Moss looked at the markers and the gifts the fans had brought. "Still didn't end up charging anything, then?"
"For my autograph? No,"
Ernst said, trying to seem cheerful, the opposite of nervous, the opposite of how he felt.
"It was nice just to know I have fans."
"Told you. People can be amazingly dedicated."
"Oh, yeah," Ernst said, pointing to a framed poster on the table beside him. "One guy did a painting of me in the water. The monster, I mean. Real good. And a couple did this song about the movie. Beware that the creature will rise if you come around and all that."
"Oh, that song is actually in the movie. Plays during the end credits. They got some folk singer to do it on the guitar. He was a big deal down south in the 70s and 80s. But vanished a couple years later."
"You don't say," Ernst said yet again. Why didn't that surprise him?
"Hey, I really appreciate you getting into the spirit of this thing."
"Spirit, yes," Ernst mumbled.
"Jose told me you've taken time to get to know each and every person who's approached you today."
"Uh-huh. Nice folks."
"You sure you don't want to do the photo ops? It's not too late to change your mind." Ernst had told Moss he preferred not to pose for photos, even if it was in some kind of assembly line, and the businessman hadn't pushed him. Maybe he would have taken them up on it, if not for the even more special guest that had appeared at the show. Now Ernst just shook his head and changed the subject.
"Utah's a religious place, right?"
Moss considered his answer.
"Yeah, well, most of the small towns are still kind of churchy, yeah. But Salt Lake is pretty cosmopolitan. There are bars, if that's what you're about to ask."
He laughed, but Ernst didn't even smile.
"Are there priests around? Monks, or whatever they're called? Someone who might..."
"Might what?"
"Might be available to talk to. To come over here for a little while."
"At a horror movie convention. Is that a joke?"
"No. I was just wondering if..."
"Are you feeling all right, Mr. Hillerman? I would be happy to buy you a beer. I could use one myself. Or I can have somebody take you to your room. Or, if you like, there are several churches in the downtown area. Catholic, non-denominational, Mormon, of course."
"Uh-huh."
He glanced to his right, as he just couldn't help doing, and saw the skeletal creature standing beside Tony Todd's autograph table, watching and waiting.
"Never was very religious myself. Too late to change now, as they say."
Moss studied Ernst's face, his posture, that look in his eyes.
"Why don't we call it a day, sir? I'll tell the folks you're done, and we'll get you out of here."
He sounded concerned.
"I appreciate that, Mr. Moss. Alonzo, but maybe I could just impose on you to walk me over to the nearest restroom."
To be blunt, Ernst had had to pee for hours now. He suspected the creature knew it as well.
"Oh, sure. It's just right there on the wall. Not far."
"I could use the company. Again, if you don't mind."
A strange expression came over Moss's face.
"Is something wrong here? Something you're not saying?"
"I just need to splash some water on my face. Use a toilet. I won't be long."
"And you want me to go with you?"
Ernst shrugged, trying to be nonchalant.
"Someone, yes. I just need a... what do you call it?
a chaperone. Alonzo Moss looked about to refuse. Ernst couldn't imagine why, but nodded curtly and said, "Of course. I'll walk you over." He turned and faced the fans who were in the line. "Hey, folks, Mr. Hillerman is going to take a little moment away. He's been very patient and very friendly, so let's give him a smoke break for a few minutes." Surprisingly, no one grumbled. No one complained. This was an unusually decent bunch for this sort of convention. Ernst stood up, but his legs nearly didn't support him. He looked over at the other booths and saw the creature take a step forward. Somehow, it was still dripping, still filthy with the brown water it had emerged from. It wanted him. Alonzo Moss came around the table and helped Ernst balance himself. "I gotcha," he whispered, then waved at the fans, thanking them again for their understanding. They walked past several other celebrity tables, none of whom Ernst recognized. A pretty middle-aged lady called, "Hanging in there, Gonzo?" "Just fine, Heather," Alonzo called back. He put his hand on Ernst's back, then took it off again, as if it were unprofessional. Together, they went into the men's room, where Ernst glanced at himself in the mirror. He seemed pale, his skin waxy, and his thin hair going awry. He stepped to the urinal and unzipped. Alonzo Moss checked his phone, glanced at Ernst, then took a second to wash his hands at the sink. Ernst opened his mouth to say something, to ask a question he'd been turning over and over again in his head. But in looking Moss's way, he froze. The creature from the brown depths had entered the restroom. It stood in the doorway, its ember eyes fixed on him. Every droplet of muddy water should have collected on the tile, but instead it just vanished. It tilted its head, which seemed to be only barely attached, the neck unbelievably broken, at Alonzo Moss, then back to Ernst. It seemed to be conveying a message. "The moment your friend leaves this room, I will make my move." What if Ernst hadn't used the urinal? What if he'd stepped into a stall? Would that have been enough for this thing to pounce? To attack? "You sure you're all right, Ernst?" Moss asked, only a foot away from the intruder. "Nobody will fault you if you decide to quit for the day."
I just stick around. We'll talk about it."
Moss had picked up on Ernst's tone, on the fear in his voice. "Hey, what happened? Did somebody give you a hard time?" Ernst finished his business and zipped back up. He was relieved to see Moss coming closer to him rather than leaving him alone. "Oh my God, yesterday there was a fan who practically assaulted one of our guests of honor," Moss disclosed. "We had to throw him out. Anything like that?" Ernst washed his hands in silence. The creature still stood in the doorway. If it didn't move, they would have to walk right past it to get out of the bathroom.
"In a way, yes,"
said Ernst, and grabbed a couple of paper towels. "Well, tell me what happened." Alonzo Moss startled Ernst by laughing, almost a bark that echoed off the walls. "I almost thought you wanted me to come in here with you for, I don't know, less savory reasons." Ernst ignored him. He walked right beside Moss toward the exit, almost arm in arm with the businessman. The creature did not move, but it didn't grab at him as they brushed past it to leave the men's room. Ernst had been close enough to smell it, a fetid, musty smell, like carpet ruined by basement seepage. They emerged onto the convention floor once again. The creature followed.
"Mr. Moss, did you know?"
Ernst said, once they were by themselves.
"About the curse."
"Did I know?" Moss seesawed his head a little. "I knew the talk, sure. Everybody saw that documentary." Ernst said nothing. He'd never seen it. Moss considered. Is there actually a curse? That's why so many people watched it. But look, there are tons of people that were involved with making Brown Depths that are probably fine today. We only take note of the ones that had bad things happen to them. They say the same about the Power Rangers.
Probably, Ernst repeated. Probably they're fine.
Well, so many of them fell off the radar, like you did. I just mean, they're probably out there, living normal lives. But like you, nobody has managed to track them down.
Ernst swallowed. But another way of putting it is they disappeared.
No, no, is that what this is all about? You said you weren't religious.
I'm not, but sometimes you can't help but ask questions.
Such as?
Maybe things are real. Things like curses.
Moss nodded, seeming very much like a psychiatrist, hearing something totally loony, but too professional to comment on it. All right, Mr. Hillerman, what would you like to do now?
I suppose I could sign some more autographs, if you want.
If I want? What do you want to do?
Ernst couldn't say what he was thinking. That he wanted to go back to when he was gathering logs, heard somebody knocking, and just ignore it. He wanted to be left alone. He wanted to go back to believing monsters weren't real.
What do you have going on?
Me? I've got to make a few calls, find out how we did today, plan for tomorrow.
Could you make those calls from here, while I do my signing?
Moss said nothing. He was studying Ernst, again, like someone trying to get inside the head of a mental patient, not sure how to proceed. At least he wasn't signaling for security, calling for the men with the butterfly nets. That was at least something.
I could make a couple of calls from here, yes. But eventually, I have to go. And you do, too. The floor is only open until 8 tonight.
Ernst wore no watch. He had no idea how close to 8 it was. He'd be happy to make it that long.
So there you go. That's where I will leave you today. I thought it would be interesting to talk about the main character. He's sort of a unique guy in the stories that I've written. He's not elderly. I imagined that he was in his 60s, but he is retired. He was a garbage man in the city. I want to say that I established that he was a trash man in New York City, but I don't think that's the case. I think he's there in, is it one of the Carolinas? He's in the South somewhere. Unfortunately, I voiced him with a bit of a New York accent. It's not something that I consciously chose to do. I think, based on the story itself, you would think he'd have to have some kind of Southern accent. Maybe I tried it. Maybe I tried delivering a couple of his lines with a drawl, and it just didn't work for me. Sometimes you just make an instinctive choice. You can't say why you made the choice, but what you've got to do is you've got to stick to your guns. If you have chosen to do a character in a certain voice, then do it for the whole rest of the thing. Try and keep it up. You know, I'm not a master at accents and character voices. I feel like I'm better than most people at that. But I'm also really, really hard on myself when I don't get it right. When I do a character with a certain voice, and then I forget, and that voice is inconsistent. Sometimes I just have an idea of what something sounds like, and then I say that, and when I listen to it played back, It's not the same as it was in my head. It's not as good. One of the Creative Commons licenses that I did for the Delusions of Grandeur podcast was Admiral Akbar. And I didn't realize it until I listened. I really listened to the way that he talks, but he does have a regional accent. And I didn't imitate that in the Creative Commons thing, and it bothers me. He goes,
although the weapon systems of this Death Star are not yet operational, it does have a strong defense mechanism.
He says Death Star, and I think at some point he says, I saw it, which I've never managed to say in my whole life. In fact, that joke in Jurassic Park went right over my head. I was not aware that there were people that said "sar." And every once in a while, I will hear a Brit use "sar." And when I was doing Abigail Hilton's book, Distraction, there were a couple of times when I tried it. I tried doing the "sar," putting an "r" on words that didn't end in "r." And it never sounded right to my ears. It sounded artificial. It sounded more than artificial. It sounded phony. And so I redid those lines. I got an audio book from the library this week, and Neil Gaiman is narrating, and he's got this wonderful buttery narration style that where he doesn't sound like anybody else. But one of the characters in the story that he was narrating is American, and he, you know, downshifted into an American accent. And it just sounded like what Americans must sound like to Europeans who are absolutely disgusted by Americans. And so I wondered, it made me wonder if my accents are similar. You know, the Kreisha in those Hunter's books have English accents. And I did various ones in this book and was trying my best to make them sound different from one another, because this book was all from the point of view of the Kreisha. And so there were very, very few American accents spoken. The Fairy Shaft speak in American accents. And of course, the narrator speaks in an American accent. And I hoped that it didn't really matter, because these aren't actually people from London or Wales or Kent. These are aliens, essentially. You know, these are characters out of a fantasy world that is not our own. And as long as I was consistent with each voice, it hopefully doesn't matter how perfectly I speak the King's English. There were a couple of words that I pronounced in the British way that the author asked me to redo, and so I say them in the American way. And that's a little strange when you're doing an English accent, but you're using American pronunciation. But it's fine, because again, these are sentient animals on a different planet. So hopefully the listener is okay with that. So Ernest Hillerman is, you know, he's just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. He's a salt of the earth type. He's not particularly educated. He doesn't feel that he's better than other people. He's a big man. I discussed that already in the book. And when I imagined him as a flesh and blood person, I thought of John Goodman, who'd been on Roseanne, and, you know, his voice is on Monsters Incorporated. He does a lot of movies with the Coen brothers. He's been known to play bad guys a few times, but by all accounts is a, you know, just a big teddy bear. How's that? And maybe I'm thinking of Sully when I call him that. I would guess that Goodman is in his 70s now. But when I wrote this, Goodman would have been around the right age for the part. And I can't remember where he's from. My guess is Texas or Arkansas or something like that. But I liked that Hillerman is sort of in over his head. You know, he's just willing to go along for the ride. He doesn't know any of this stuff, you know, that he doesn't know how comic conventions work or that, you know, you charge for autographs. I like the idea that he was in something and had no idea that anybody cared about the movie that he was in, that anybody cared about him, that anybody knew who he was. And part of that was inspired by, I went to a Star Wars convention in 2002, so it's 20 years ago already, but it sure doesn't feel that way. And I got to meet a few of these actors that played background aliens in Star Wars or Return of the Jedi, mostly Return of the Jedi. And Jedi was the one that I was most enamored with. It came out when I was just the right age for it, and it had a buttload of monsters, more so than the first two movies put together. And so I just ate it up, and I talked to these guys. There were people there that I wanted to talk to that had gone decades unnoticed, unrecognized, unlauded. And talking to a couple of these guys, they were mostly British. They were delighted that people like me from the other side of the world knew who they were, knew what their character's name was, wanted to pay to get their autograph. And it just, you know, it was something, it really warmed my heart. There was one guy, and I want to say that his name is Gerald Hone, but I feel like that's not right, but it's very close. Gerald Hone. Gerald Hume, and he played a character that was known as Squidhead when I was a little boy, and it was one of the very first action figures that I got, and I just loved it. I loved the way that it looked and loved that character who does nothing in Return of the Jedi, nothing. And he was just so happy a couple of years before when he found out that his character had a name. I think it's West End Games had gone in and named all of the background characters in the Star Wars trilogy, and they had named Squidhead Tessic. And he just thought it was really funny that we cared about the guy that was under the costume, and I pulled from that with Ernest Hillerman. He wasn't even credited, right? But there were people that were willing to pay for his autograph. And I listened to some of the audiobook in preparation for doing these episodes. I said earlier, I'm my worst critic. There are a couple of parts where I thought, shoot, I should have done that again. That could have been better. And then there are other moments where I think, oh, I could have expanded on this part. You know, something that is a paragraph could have been a page. But I've never been good at writing long form prose. I'm much more of a short story guy than a novel guy. And Newfound Fame never even comes close to being a novel. But if I had to expand it out, to make it a full novel, I could put in, like Stephen King did in Carrie, some fake newspaper articles or magazine articles about the filmmakers and how they died. You know, body of area filmmaker found. You know, and then you write up the condition the body was found in, but luckily dental records matched it up with a guy who made movies in the late 1980s. And then there could be a little paragraph about the Brown Depths, which is probably not a great title either, but I like it. I like the idea of the local urban legend kind of thing. This idea that, you know, you don't go into the woods at night because there's a vengeful spirit in the woods. Essentially, that is what the Brown Depths monster is a vengeful spirit. And it's a little bit like, do you remember last episode I talked about the ring, Ringu? It's a little bit like that. Like the people that it wants to kill haven't necessarily done anything wrong. Maybe in the movie, they're all guilty of the sin of drinking or drugs or premarital sex or being a lesbian. You know, because that was something that they went to. That was a trough that they went to over and over and over again in those slasher movies in the 1980s. Was that there are things that are sins, and if you commit these sins, you will pay for it. It was just laziness on the filmmakers' parts, and it also gave them a chance to have characters do stupid things, because when you're drunk or under the influence, you don't think clearly, and then gave them a chance to show some skin, because a lot of times you can get your prerequisite nudity in if you throw in a sex scene on this page. And it probably sounds like I'm being really critical of those slasher films. I see them with tons of affection. I loved those movies. And I loved that there was a stretch of time between 1981 and 1988 where if you made a horror movie, it would find distribution. And if it found distribution, dollars to donuts, it would make money. Now, of course, there are exceptions. And that's sort of what Brown Depths was supposed to be. You know, it showed in a few theaters. Then it would have made the bulk of its money on home video. Whatever company it was had the rights, would make a videotape, print up, let's say, 50,000 of them, and sell each one for $109.99 or $99.99, or if you were really lucky, $89.99 to a mom-and-pop video store. And they would hopefully rent it 10-plus times, and it would make its money back. And with movies like that, like Evil Dead or a John Carpenter film, you know, the Friday the 13th, those would always be rented out. There was always somebody that wanted to watch these because they're fun to watch in a group. They're entertaining. I almost said universally. They're practically universally entertaining. And these mom and pop video stores did very, very well. And so that should have happened for the Brown Depths. The filmmakers would have maybe not been rich, but been able to pay off their houses. And more importantly, would have had the clout, the wherewithal, to get another movie made with a similar budget. Or maybe Hollywood would come calling and they'd be able to do something with a bigger budget. But tragedy struck the people that made the Brown Depths, and none of them really got to experience success after that. Because they'd crossed the wrong being. Anyhow, I'm going to leave you right here. I don't have anything more to say. And my plan is in a couple of weeks, maybe another month, I will record the last bit. And then I'll put them all out together. And hopefully, the fact that I took a long time in between episodes makes those episodes better than if I had recorded all of them in the single weekend. Which is what I usually do. The only benefit to recording them all in this a single weekend is that I can remember the things that I've said and I don't repeat myself. But I'll tell you, it's not the greatest sin in the world to repeat yourself. It's something that I'm hyper aware of and sensitive about, but I don't know that most people care. Dang.
I don't know.
I'm not sure that most people care. If you care and have enjoyed this presentation, I suggest that you support me on Patreon. You can pay $1 an episode or $2 an episode. I think it's possible to pay more than that, but no one does. And just join the community there. You can comment on the episodes, ask questions, and I'll answer them. Sometimes I put up polls, and I appreciate every single person that supports me on that platform, and it really keeps me going. Sometimes I'm not so anxious to put out new episodes. Sometimes I feel like I don't have anything going on. Other times I have too many things going on. But because I have these Patreon supporters who seem to really like what I do, I keep doing it. If not, I will join you again in a very short time for the final segment of Newfound Fame. And have a good night.
Greetings. This is fake Sean Connery. You know what scares me? Besides the unholy amount of work Rish puts into these fruitless, interminable episodes of his, that he does it all under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license, which makes the episodes free to listen to, download, and spread around. All the license does forbid changing the files, or selling them, or claiming them for your own, but that's little comfort when I'm trying to get some sleep and Rish is over there clicking away like a madman, cutting out ums and snorts and you knows and the profanities he screams at passing vehicles. He's not alone, though. The music in this episode was also produced under a Creative Commons license by one Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Of course, that chap is positively swimming in currency and surrounded by the kind of sexually ravenous lassies I was constantly besieged by circa From Russia with Love. Special thanks to you for listening all the way through to the end. Until next time, podcasts are forever.
All the leaves are brown and the sky is gray. I've been for a walk on a winter's day. If I didn't tell her, I'd be back in L.A., California, dreaming of such a winter's day. Hello, folks. This is Rish Outfield.
Nurse McDonald laughed. That'll be the evil laugh. It's a tiny cracked laugh. Let's try a tiny. That's good, dude.
By K.T. Briskey. 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 By K.T. Briskey.
He'd gotten a little bit sunburned on his last. He'd gotten a little bit sunburned on his last lifeguard ship. Fuck. He'd gotten a little bit sunburned on his last lifeguard shift, even though he hadn't been outside in the sun. And now, she could sometimes get Kimono to fly around, briefly, above her, then land on her shoulder. And now, she could sometimes get Kimono to fly around, briefly. I'm going to say however. And now, she could... And now she could sometimes get Kimono to fly around, however briefly, over her head. And now she could sometimes get Kimono to fly around, however briefly, over her head, then land on her shoulder once again, like a trained falcon. It was not widely known in town that Rick had asked It was not widely known in town.
Oof.
It was not widely known in town that Rick Ashford had asked Irena Cardano to go with him. It was not widely known in town that Rick Ashford had asked Irena Cardano to go with him to the fucking... Rick Ashford had asked Irena Cardano to go to homecoming with him. It was not widely known in town that Rick Ashford had asked Irena Cardano to go to homecoming with him, and she had turned him down, despite him making a 3-foot poster using real carnations. Despite him making a 3-foot invitation poster using real carnations.
Here's one more little outtake for you. There were actors that were trying to sell their autographs. They had little booths, and as we were walking past one of them was for the actor who had played Grady. Was it the bartender? The caretaker? I think Grady was the bartender in The Shining. The one who said, "My girls didn't like the Overlook at first. In fact, one of them stole a book of matches and tried to burn it down. I corrected her, sir. And when my wife tried to prevent me from doing my duty, I corrected her." Anyway, I don't know what the actor's name was, but he had a booth and he was signing autographs and there was no one there. And as we walked by, I glanced at it and Jeff just kept walking. And I said, "Whoa, hey, Jeff, it's the guy who played the bartender in The Shining." And the actor stopped me and he says, "Have you seen The Shining?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, of course." He says, "And you remember me from it?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, buy a fucking autograph then." It was weird because, you know, that didn't go with the accent at all.